About things, many, many, many things, and often nothing at all. I am here weekly because I did not have a full breakfast this morning with web developer and podcast host Allison, Allison Plus on the internet. I am also joined by web developer and podcast host Chris, who is Jazz Sequence on the internet. I'm a web developer, podcast host, Binary Gary on the internet.
What do we have in common again?
Yeah, no idea.
Actually, I thought that introduction would be fantastic. It wasn't, but I thought it would be because of the last introduction I've been thinking about for a week now, when Chris introduced us as valued customer. Still laughing about that. It's been a week. Doesn't take much.
There's an interesting conversation in the inclusivity channel on my work Slack about the term developer versus the term engineer. Very loud, AC. Because typically women and people that have less development experience are less likely to apply to a job that is titled engineer than developer because they feel like they don't qualify. This is interesting because at HumanMade, we sort of followed what TenUp did. Because TenUp calls all their people engineers, and there is some project that we bid on that despite our comparative expertise in the field, the client went with TenUp because they felt like their team was more experienced. So we switched terms from developer to engineer for that reason, particularly because the types of clients we are trying to appeal to respond better to the term engineer than developer.
That's fascinating.
Web developer or web engineer?
I feel that I fall squarely in the developer bucket.
See, so I don't. Yeah, I think I think most of us, at least
hairs.
At HumanMade, I think most of us at HumanMade would be perfectly fine with a developer title, but it's not for us anyway. It's sort of like optics.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair. So my title, you know, because we can set our title in company Slack. My title is backend developer / obstacle. Because I often feel as though, you know, we need to get this one thing is ready to go, but we're still waiting on backend. So obstacle as opposed to blocker. Blocker felt like it had a negative connotation. Obstacle is like it's a fun challenge. You know, like you go to an obstacle course and have fun. You don't go to a blocker course, right? So I thought obstacle would be a nice title. And I realized that the other day when I was chatting with a client.
I don't go to very many obstacle courses, so I don't really know why you would.
I picture like an agility course, like when people do it with like pets or with their dogs. So there's like, they jump hurdles, they go through like weird tunnels.
Like the ninja, like the
for
ninja
working
training
with me on
thing.
Anything. You have to weave between the poles really fast with your
like,
tail
yeah.
wagging and run through that chute that's like a sleeve at the end and it pops up and the dog comes. Yeah.
Wait, I think I might have seen this video on YouTube where the dude jumps through the circular shaped gymnastics hoop thing.
Yeah. Like a flip.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't do that. I don't do much of that, Gary. So I don't know about obstacle courses being fun.
It's like half parkour, half coding, half. It's like you can console log this thing, but first jump through this hoop and land on your feet.
Man. Yeah.
The keyboard is over there and you need to complete the challenge after doing a backflip.
Get to your keyboard, complete these exercises. Ugh. I've always considered myself a developer, but I can see the argument to each. Although I also understand some people's, I guess, concerns about being called an engineer, but also because like sometimes, like I think there are certain regulations about who can call themselves engineers in certain industries anyway.
Yeah, but I feel like the term is a little bit silly because like I don't ride a train.
I want to wear
I do want to
wear a train cap. Yes.
We all show up with conductor hats and overalls next time, like we know what we're talking about.
And I haven't studied engineering. The title of engineer is a little bit non-applicable, but I also recognize it's an industry thing. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was interesting, since you were talking about web developers, and technically I'm an engineer, but really only because that's what other people call me.
Mm-hmm. I could be calling myself whatever I want, I guess, as a freelancer. I should really,
yes,
should really flex my terminology a bit more. Forget core engineer. What can I call myself?
Web happiness enforcer.
I don't know why. At my local WordPress meetup, I still have the conversation always comes up, like, why don't you work for yourself, right? So last night someone asked me that. And I just said, 'cause my boss is an idiot when I do that. So that is he was like a nice gentleman. Yeah. Like I can't work with that dude. He's impossible to work with.
He's an obstacle, is what he is.
Can't get anything done with him. Yeah.
Just feels like I'm jumping through hoops all day.
The keyboard's over there.
I like the allusion to like running through an obstacle course with you though, Gary. I feel like that's, it seems fun.
It does, doesn't it? It seems like much, much more fun than
just hitting a wall.
Being a blocker. Yeah. Blocker is like, or it's a football term, maybe. American football term.
So, we have a topic today.
We do. We totally have a topic.
Chris and I have no idea what the topic is.
As per usual.
And we may not know what the topic is once we hear the topic.
So I might
most likely.
Really know what the topic is. I may or may not have done
a lot
on it.
Allison's going to be frantically Googling during the episode.
What do you think I've been doing this whole time?
She's like, keep talking about blockers.
Yeah, I'm like, keep talking about this other. No. I totally have a topic. I'm totally ready. The topic for this week is Snellen chart.
What?
Snellen chart.
Snellen chart.
Two words.
Snellen.
The second word is chart.
Snellen. Chart.
This is clearly another German word.
I think Snellen is a name.
Oh. Really?
Yes. Yes, Jonathan Snellen. In 1842, Jonathan Snellen developed a particular kind of chart to help him with his grain dispensary. And this chart is commonly referred to now as a burndown chart.
I do have to correct.
Because Kanban.
Because Jonathan Snellen was knighted, so it's probably Sir Jonathan.
Sir Jonathan Snellen.
I'm so amazed that you know this.
No, I made that.
Of all the charts that I'm aware of,
none of them is a Snellen chart.
Yeah.
But my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, list some of these other charts. I need to know this.
Well, I mean,
a burndown chart, obviously. Yeah.
There's a pie.
Gantt with two N's, right? Gantt chart. Flow chart.
Venn diagram.
I was about to ask, is a Venn diagram considered a chart or not?
It plots data, so I would think that it counts.
It's chartish.
Yeah.
I be confused with chartish.
Which would enter the whole spinach versus kale debate again.
Oh, no, I was thinking how you would deal with pieces of a database. Actually, it didn't matter what you said. I was thinking of the opposite.
That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. So a Snellenbrook chart. What was it? Snelling?
Snellen.
Schelling? Snellen. Can you spell that? Did you already spell it?
No, I didn't. S-N-E-L-L-E-N.
you're like, it's not going to help. So I'll happily spell it.
I can spell it.
Yeah.
Sir Jonathan Snellen, definitely.
Well, if it's a person's name, we can't take any clues from there. Like, you can't take a person's last name and understand what industry they're in. My name is not Gary.
Charting,
engineer.
Obviously.
Gary, is the web developer.
Charting is the industry. He's in the industry of charting.
I wonder, what are things you would chart? You would chart, for some reason, I think this is with boats.
Boats?
Like, why not boats? I feel like this is when you chart the channel in ports where boats dock to load and offload goods. Value customers.
Sir Jonathan Snellen was a man of many talents, apparently.
Well, I mean, he just sat on the edge of a rowboat with like a lead weight on a string. Yep, that's about 6 feet. Oh, that's like 30 feet. That's much better. Here's the edge of the channel. So as you're pulling in your tugboat, you pull out your Snellen chart to verify that you're in the channel.
To verify, am I in the water?
Have I run aground? No, I'm still moving.
I'm still in the water.
Actually, I think that would be just called a map, wouldn't it?
Or
did I tell you that I mentioned on the show about the shipwreck we went to when we were up in Oregon a couple months ago?
No.
There's a shipwreck that is on the beach, a part of a shipwreck, from the Peter Iredale, which was an old sailboat, one of the last sort of sailboats that still had sails that to do cargo shipping. And it was actually going to be decommissioned. It was like in the late 1800s, so it was like sort of on the cusp of when boats were still like wooden and had sails versus when boats had like metal sides and had engines. So this was still a sailboat and so it was you know, very old. I mean, not very old, it was like 40, 50 years at the time that it ran aground. Anyway, the reason why it ran aground was because they didn't have their Snellen chart. They were going up, they were trying to get into the Columbia River
to
do a delivery, and their boss man said that he would give everybody on the ship a bonus if they could cut the time of their travel by a week. So, in an effort to do so,
they did not get the bonus.
In an effort to do so, they ran really close to the shore, and that particular part of the Oregon coast has a very, very long beach. So they ran aground because it was very shallow, and yeah.
I was hoping you'd say, so they tried to cut the corner by blasting towards the corner.
Yeah.
And trying to launch themselves over into the river.
Because they didn't have
a sailboat.
Because they didn't have a Snellen chart to tell them how.
I wonder how useful that would be near a beach anyway, because the depth is, I mean, tides obviously play so much into it, and erosion and derosion, or whatever the opposite is.
The opposite
sand is built up.
The opposite of erosion would be.
Erosion.
Would be sand fixing itself to the wall of the rock face or whatever. It would be like things putting themselves back together, which I don't think is a thing.
Time travel. Got it.
Piling things back on.
Yeah. Well, but sometimes when there's storms, like I feel like the displaced sand has to end up somewhere, and it as it's washing out, it ends up like in weird situations. And piles up.
Not called.
Here's a sandspur? No, a sandbar.
Sandspur.
I probably shouldn't have gone to the sandbar before this conversation.
But that's, yes. It collecting and gathering and forming new things is a thing, but it is not.
It's not related to erosion.
It's not the opposite of erosion.
Erosion.
Hmm. What else would you chart then?
This conversation was eroding, but now it's just eroding.
That's how much erosion has occurred.
You would chart a lot of businessy things. So maybe it's a business chart, right? I used to chart all sorts of businessy stuff.
Yes. And obviously it was a successful chart because Sir Jonathan Snellen is a common household name and we use his chart every day.
Back up a bit. Sir Jonathan Snellen is not actually the person, right?
Oh, sure it is.
What is his name?
According to Chris, yes.
According to Chris, yes. I like that we've fabricated a person so effortless, like so
weave.
Yes, weave. I like that we've fabricated a person so realistically that you're now questioning whether this person actually exists. Wait.
I mean, is this one of those like flukes of history where it was like really Martha Snellen that did the work, but he got the credit?
Look, that would be the kind of topic that I bring to the table usually.
Yeah.
Like Martha deserved the credit. Jonathan just swooped in.
Well, the good news is we call it a Snellen chart, not a Jonathan Snellen chart, right? So
I don't call it anything because. Snellen chart is not part of my vernacular.
It is today. Have we considered that it is an acronym?
Snellen? That's a really long acronym.
There's too many letters for me to come up with the thing that would be an acronym for.
Oh, man. That's all I was pulling for, was that you would waddle around in that word for a while and try and make something out of it.
That's a good point, though. Like, at what point is something just ridiculous to be an acronym?
More than five letters. Actually, five letters is pretty ridiculous, but more than five.
No, it's not. It's pronunciability matters as much too. So, like, quantity of letters is okay if it's easy to pronounce and everyone is aware of what the acronym is.
Okay. Yeah.
So, what are your favorite acronyms?
What's the longest?
Quantacaf.
That's a good acronym.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to explain that. Like, I know what that is.
Then there's the South American one, which is CONMEBOL, which is a little bit harder.
That's not as great.
It's less pronounceable. Yeah, no, you're right. It's
a lot of time quite as easily.
Yeah, I feel like that's where .com bubble missed things. Like, we had a bunch of made-up words that should have been acronyms instead, you know? Like, FIFA is a fun word to say, but it actually stands for something, too. Yeah. So it's like it's coming at you two levels, you know? Scuba is another one. Like, that's just awesome. Scuba is a fun word to say, but it actually is an acronym. But then there were things like, I'm trying to remember some of the weird .com stuff. They all started with W's, didn't they? But like made up, like.
I used hypertext transfer protocol in the sentence this last week.
That's amazing.
Did you use it? No, I feel like the only time you would say that as opposed to HTTP, probably didn't say HTTP, but the time you would say that is to point out that is a transfer protocol, correct?
I did it to make fun of a narrator because it was it was a stuff.
Okay, well, I guess that's another reason to do it.
So we were listening to an audiobook and it had this stuffy English sound, English accented person who's doing like the intro and outro, and he's like, you can visit our website at www.blahblahblah.com, and I'm like, hypertext transfer protocol world wide web.
So what do you think about the abbreviation when people say
stuffy English accent, like www dot anything didn't sound right, so hypertext transfer protocol.
What do you think about when people abbreviate www as triple dub or tri dub or dub dub dub?
No, no, and no.
What are we saving?
What are we saving?
That extra syllable.
Omit that entirely.
The U, the dub dub, yeah, the ilu is what we're saving. Ilu is three times.
But is the attempt to save something or add cool points?
I think it's actually to add
cool points. I know nothing about the cool points thing, but it's 2018. Like, do we need to prefix the domain?
No.
The three W's?
No.
Like, we know it's on the World Wide Web at this point.
Binary, I think we're all jazz, clear on that. Dot us. We don't need www. Type in binaryjazz.us and you will see
us
collectively.
I worked on a site years ago that had both the .com and the www. The site was identical. Dub, dub, dub. But it was actually hosted on two physically different machines. One was a Linux server, and one was Windows NT like ISS. ISS is the space station. IIS is the thing that serves stuff from Windows. Yeah. So two physically different machines serving the exact same static HTML. I'm still flabbergasted as we sit here today. Why? How was that decision even made?
What? Wait, so there is domain.com and there is www.domain.com and there are two different boxes.
They were two physically different. Yeah, and actually physical boxes. Like they weren't like on shared hosting or anything. They had their Linux server. They had their Windows server. They hosted the identical website on both.
I mean, I guess you could do some sort of like cheap A/B testing that way, right? Like you don't need to. I know, but I mean, you don't need to have a program or a software or a plugin or something in front of it to handle the like routing it to the site A versus site B. You just have like the people that hit www.whatever and the people that hit whatever. I mean, there's probably some interesting analytics that you could come up with.
Like, I was not first enough that time to ask like why
www.domain.com.
But you could do that. You don't need two separate machines to do that.
No,
but like, this is making me more frustrated now than it did at the time.
Two separate machines.
At the time, I was just
one being Windows and one being Linux means you could sort of performance
in the hierarchy. Of engineer, developer, programmer, coder, maybe? Like, I barely called myself a coder at that point. Like, I was running a thing that I ran a Perl script that rendered HTML, and I don't know. It worked, but I mean, it was like, here's a dynamic website, but you have to render it before someone needs it. So every iteration that someone could hit on the site, we pre-rendered the static HTML for it. And that was... And then the second script was taking that and FTPing it to both locations. And that was wherein I found the issue with two physical servers.
Yeah, that's dumb.
It was dumb. I don't think I was charging a lot of money.
I'm stuck on your hierarchy because like I would more likely consider myself a coder now than in the beginning.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk to this hierarchy. Maybe this is the Snellen chart.
I feel like they're more like, I feel like instead of hierarchy, it's more like merit badges where it's like you just have a collection of things.
Oh,
Rather than moving up a rank.
I was a web designer, and then I was a coder.
Were you ever a webmaster though?
I was a webmaster. I actually had that title. Yeah.
That term still makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I am the master of the web.
I just felt like Dungeons and Dragons-y, right? Like I felt like I needed to like, can we get an update on this page? Like roll dice. Like, oh, sorry.
I've never played Dungeons and Dragons, but this morning I have to admit I went to a coffee shop and there was a flyer for like Dungeons and Dragons camp. And I was like, that's so cool. And then like right underneath, it's like for ages 10 to 14. And I was like, oh, and I had this moment of, oh, cool. And then I was like, oh, it's not for me. And then I was just like,
there should be Dungeons and Dragons camp. That's for all ages.
Well, like, I obviously can take initiative and go play somewhere, but I really liked the idea of, like, someone else setting up this.
I think I was imagining, like, a literal camp. Like, you go camping in Dungeons & Dragons in the forest or something.
I was just like, okay. I was just like, it's summertime. I can do this. Like, that sounds some nature, some dragons, some character development. I can get on board. I don't know.
Have we reached the part of the show where you ask what a Snellen chart is?
You've been asking it since moment one, so.
It's true.
Why set an arbitrary mark?
Can I officially?
I was enjoying talking about being a webmaster.
Oh, webmasters. I can, like, wax nostalgic about webmastering. Web rings.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I feel like there were things we solved back then that are still problematic, and it makes no sense. Like image size is always a thing, and like the minimum threshold for image size keeps getting bigger because our screens keep getting more pixely or less. They have more pixels. They're more compact or they're higher resolution. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. But so it's like a
higher resolution, more pixely. Okay.
What's
more
the
pixels?
More pixely.
Pixelful.
They're more. Yeah. Right. We just keep pouring more pixels into them, right? And
somewhere there's a designer being like,
like closing their laptop or like throwing their iPhones in to listen to this episode. Yeah. I had a buddy last night who walked up and he's like, hey, can you help me figure out why this isn't working? And he opens his laptop and he shows me like the inspector and something wasn't displaying. He had a style being added to this div that had a class. He's like, why is this not working? I'm like, but there's no way to tell. he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, we'll never know. Like, you're just going to rename it. He's like, really? I'm like, no, I'm sure someone here can figure it out, but it's not me.
I had the opposite.
You have to shut your computer and throw it into the ocean because.
Yeah. Jeez, you, this is it. You're done. You can't do anymore.
I had the opposite experience. I was over at a friend of my daughter's house picking her up, and her dad is a video production guy. He makes short films and commercials and things. And he's out of this website that's like a million years old, and he's getting it redone with a guy, WordPressy thing. And it's one of those themes that like, hey, it's the video production theme. And it has all this built-in stuff, and it makes you think that that's what WordPress is, and it's really not, because it like overwrites all the back-end stuff. It's awful. Anyway, he had this thing where like, and he was struggling with it until his guy that was helping him with it figured it out, how to do things. So all the things were done, except there's this one image that wasn't centered. And it was kind of bugging him, but it wasn't a big deal. I mean, he'll deal with it, but it's you know, it's a picture that should be centered, and it's not. So I'm like, okay, and I look at it, and I had the opposite experience to you, Gary. Like, I knew the thing to do, and I, like, did, you know, went into an inspector, and I looked at the source and figured out what it was, and he's like, and he's looking at the source code on the screen. He's like, so when you're looking at this, does this actually look like English to you? like, yeah, yeah. And then I went in, and I added a class, or I added a style to a class, and I was done, and it was like 5 minutes, and like, oh my God, it's a miracle! Like, it's, yeah.
And it's centered.
And it's centered, yes. Display block margin auto.
Anytime I think I know what I'm doing and I'm like, oh, I can't center this thing. Never mind. Back to square one.
I spoke about WPCLI last night at the meetup, which meant I just opened my terminal and typed the WP command. I'm like, what looks cool in here? Just demoed that. And hosed the site, the local site I was working on, and then stored it. And I mean, maybe it was like the perfect demo for WPCLI. Oh, we broke everything.
Explain what WPCLI is as
an acronym
to our listeners. Who
it
are not
is. Familiar. It's not a great acronym, though.
No,
WPCLI, WordPress.
Publicly.
Command line interface. Yeah, you can't say it. Yeah.
Well, no, but just interface. As far as like throwing around terms for our civilians.
That's fair. Yes.
Yes.
Right. So WPCLI is a way to interact with your WordPress site from the command line. So black screen, green text, flashy green button. Like a computer of yours.
Your black screen has green text, but my black screen has white text.
Mine has purple.
Oh, we should. So my prompt has countdown of the next launch from Kennedy Space Center. It has the current weather. It has a stock ticker. It has.
Why do you need those things in your prompt? Why do you need to see those things every time you hit enter?
I mean, I don't read them all the time. It's just there.
My
if I want to know, then it's.
My prompt has path. And if it's Git, then it's like what branch and.
But you checked out the branch. You know what branch you're in. Why do you need that there?
Sometimes I don't.
So, yeah. Sometimes I'm lost in the forest.
That's fair. Because I have the
very frequently I'm checked out on master and forget.
I often type Git status to find out what branch I'm on, even though the branch is right there. I don't know. This has really turned into like how the sausage is made episode, hasn't it?
Also, I usually have a million different tabs open in my browser, and that also applies to terminals. I often have at least five terminal tabs because of, like different branches, different things. So I know where the hell I am. I have the branch in like the path and the branch. It's valuable because otherwise I wouldn't know where I was.
I missed an opportunity. This is very much how the Dyson Sphere is made. I'm sorry. Can we edit that in post-production?
No.
Please?
No.
Like, sure. Next time there's post-production, I'll edit that. We reached part of the show where we understand what the topic is.
Please, please.
Well, obviously, Sir Jonathan Snellen in 1967.
I thought it was 1842.
Yes, that.
Look, we're at remaining time already, and we don't know what the topic is.
This great. Is, this you're living Sir your best. Jonathan Snellen. You're living your best binary jazz life. If I've done my job properly.
And you have.
And I have.
So explain what it is for the listeners that aren't.
I'm just going to do this for the benefit of the listeners.
Value customers.
Gary and Chris can just tune out for now because I know they're fully aware.
Sure.
A Snellen chart is the eye chart that we see in our eye doctors with the big E.
I feel duped.
Why?
I don't know.
It's used to measure visual acuity. They're named for not Sir Jonathan Snellen.
Dr. Jonathan Snellen.
Dr. Herman Snellen, Dutch ophthalmologist. Herman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was developed in the 1860s, which was, pretty on point. And now there's like an evolved version that's called a Logmar chart. That's like an improved version of his.
The one with the E shape that's in different directions.
Yeah. So it's like it's different letters. Instead of the giant E, I think it's like DSR or something.
Last time I had to read an eye chart, I did it with my glasses on and whatever. And then they were like, take your glasses off and do it. Like, we're not going to get very far, you know? So I did the first line, and I'm like, well, I have the second line from memory, and the third line from memory, probably the fourth line from memory. But, like, legitimately, like, I need to look at these and determine what I have been able to read. Like, this is harder now. I should have done it without the glasses first.
Anyway,
yeah, I trust Florida doctors.
Now you can wow if you, next time you go in for an eye exam, you can... Really?
Oh, that's a Snellen chart.
Yeah, you can
a really high quality Snellen chart.
Like
really a looker.
I think there was some data that was basically just like it's the most commonly purchased chart. It's like the most widely publicized chart or something that people buy because they're everywhere. So I was like, that's an interesting.
I feel like this chart is not quite as commonly usable as Petrichor. I used Petrichor in a sentence last week too.
That's amazing.
I'm gonna change my lock screen on my phone to a Snellen chart today.
A Snellen chart, yeah. Or a Logmar chart, depending on how updated.
No, I feel like in the interest of this show, I don't have an option. It has to be the Snellen.
I have to go back.
Yeah.
Well, Herman Snellen, you know, just. And he looks exactly
the distant cousin of Sir Jonathan Snellen.
Yes. He looks exactly as you would expect.
Only distant when he's not wearing his glasses. When he's wearing his glasses, it's like they're right there.
Yeah.
He doesn't wear glasses in the photo of him, actually. Just kind of disappointing.
Ooh, he had the LASIK stuff done, huh?
Yeah. Well, for some reason.
They used to do it with a log back in the day. They'd hold a log over your head and just pound until. Can you see? It's very refined since then. Oh. Named by Dr. German LASIK, obviously.
So at this point of the show, typically we take listener questions. And if we don't have any listener questions, then Allison gives us questions. We do have listener questions. We also have pre-submitted Allison questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank goodness I was watching out for
As webmaster, you get to decide which one we do.
It's true. I'm going to go with the two listener submitted questions and
sure.
Yeah.
And because they're listener submitted. So we have another question from what am I saying?
Sure.
Question from Lisa. Mm-hmm. And Lisa would like to know do you have go babs?
Nope. Sure I don't.
Do you have go bags prepped for your family in case of an emergency requiring you to evacuate? Mm-hmm. Are you now going to lay in bed tonight? Assessing risk and whether you need to do this.
So question. Yeah, no and no. I take that back. So hurricane season.
Not gonna freak out about it now.
No.
Wait, you don't have go bags, but because you don't go anywhere, you just have supplies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just batten down the hatches. That's not true. So there are times like when the hurricane is coming, like there's that conversation, like do we leave or not, right? And it's just always, like, where's the track showing it? And sometimes the track is, like, totally wrong by hundreds of miles and you go, oh, no, we're going to stay put, we'll be fine. And then, you know, it's crappy and you don't have power for a while. Or sometimes it's like when we're at you, you're like, oh, let's go. And you call hotels and the closest one that you can find is, you know, a 5 or 6 hour drive. Ordinarily, and you factor in all the traffic, like we won't get there before the storm hits anyway. So, no, I mean, but for hurricanes coming, we do probably pack
earlier.
It's the decision. The problem is the decision time. It's like, you know, you don't want to feel stupid and leave town and like it totally misses and it's just beautiful sunny days and you're trapped in some hotel 3 states away. It's the closest one you could find a room in.
Worse ways to feel stupid.
Yeah, better to be stupid and alive. That's fair. That's fair.
I do not have go back, said it, and I probably won't stay up tonight wondering about risk.
Now, I do throw, we do throw like a change of clothes in a bag. Like
that's a go bag.
I don't have one now. Like I will make one. Like if there's a hurricane that looks like it might be this way, change of clothes for everybody and the kids, or the kids and everybody, just everybody.
We have a couple crates that are like pre-filled with all of our camping stuff. Like, so when we go camping, we don't have to like pack all the camping stuff. We already have the thing. Just take it, put it in the car.
When I traveled for work, I always had a go bag packed.
I don't have a go bag per se, but we do have like a survival trunk.
Judge's ruling that might qualify.
That might qualify.
Can you carry it by yourself?
No.
Okay. Well, then no, it's not a go bag.
Yeah. But it's like, it's just a container for the things that we would need in the event of emergency. But I think it could easily be transferred into a bag that we would then go with. I mean, we've had extensive conversations about like zombie apocalypse. My partner, I think, definitely has more awareness as far as how
of the possibility of a zombie apocalypse.
Well, no, just like the idea.
Well, someone has to bear that burden in the relationship, right?
I mean, well, yeah, and do you know what the burden is? The burden is that I've apparently already been mourned for because I wouldn't cut it. It seems to be the consensus.
In the event of the zombie apocalypse,
that sucks.
Wouldn't make it past the first episode?
I wouldn't, yeah. I'd be the one that's like trying to protect canned goods, apparently, and be left behind.
So you're an extra? Is that...
Oh, totally. In this scenario, I don't
like
even
a red shirt.
I don't like even. Oh yeah, I don't. I'm perhaps not even in a uniform.
No, I think that she'd be pre-red shirt. Like she's one of the victims that the red shirts go investigate.
Yeah, they're like, this thing already happened, and we have to go down and see.
God, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, like, I guess you just have to call it like you see it in these scenarios.
Right. I mean, I'm disappointed for you. Like that's. Yeah, that'd be a rough.
I mean, I think
like a rough conversation.
There aren't many things in Utah that would necessitate a go bag. However, that doesn't stop plenty of Utahns from like being full on survival kit. Like, I don't know, aficionados. Like, there's tons of like survival stores. Survival things is a thing here, and I think it's because we have this sort of historical cultural identity of like being afraid of invasion.
Running away.
Yeah, running away and being afraid of invasion and protecting your stuff. So like the gun carry laws and all that stuff is all about like they're gonna come in and they're gonna like take all your stuff and so we need to be prepared to fight back.
Mm-hmm. Or something.
And then yeah, like when they shut down the power and the stores are all, then we've got our kit, but I don't.
Yeah, and I think that's where our kit kind of falls. It's more of a hunker down kit with like lantern, water filter, this weird like heat reflective blanket thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's progressively getting bigger as the paranoia in our household grows. So we'll see where. That's why it's in the trunk.
I mean, like I always jokingly say, if like all hell breaks loose and there's nowhere to get food, like we have a dog and a cat. So
no. That's like Donner Party for me.
Yeah, and then we have prickly pears.
You should leave the prickly
pears first.
Yeah.
They won't. I don't know how long they'll last.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.